Yes, sir.
There's been a lot of talk lately about extending the tax cuts for the affluent and to finance that by a reduction in government spending. I assume that the economists would agree that we reduce the size of the government, the government cuts out spending $1.5 trillion a year to balance the budget. That'd be kind of devastating to the economy. Also hear that the important factor is debt as a percentage of the gross domestic product. The last time it was at zero was in the 1830s when President Andrew Jackson paid off the national debt. After that, it fluctuated somewhat, reaching a peak of about 40% in the 40s after the Great Depression. And then, of course, when we went into World War II, it went up to almost 120% of the GDP. After World War II, it came down to about 20% in the 1970s, where it kind of leveled out until the 80s. Then it started going back up with certain fluctuations.
I'm not going to make you repeat the question. I've heard fine.
They don't have to speak.
Yeah.
And with certain fluctuations, it has continued to rise until, of course, in 2008, when all this money was pumped into the economy. My question is, first off, is my assessment fairly correct in that it's important about the GDP? And secondly, what can be done, or what has been done historically, to reduce those high levels where we're currently at 90-some percent, I think, which is the highest that we've been since, since World War II, and maybe the second highest ever. So what's the answer to that?
Well, let me first paraphrase the question. The gentleman had a long and well-researched discussion of the level of national debt. This would be federal and state and local, but principally the focus is on federal debt to gross domestic product and how it has fluctuated over the history of the country from very low levels to high level during Second World War, back to low levels, and now is growing and headed, I think you cited the number 90% as at least directionally where that ratio might be going. And the question is, broadly, does it influence the recovery and what can be done about it? Well, first, let me make an important distinction, and that is that as an official of the Federal Reserve, we're responsible for monetary policy, and we conduct the formulation of monetary policy with enjoying a fair amount of independence from short-term political give and take. And so on matters of fiscal policy, you know, I really prefer not to get into the details of the extension of the tax, of the high-income tax rates or the anything related to the kind of the short-term discussion of how the fiscal problem should be addressed. But I can broadly, I think, respond to your question in this way. First, countries just like households operate with some amount of debt. And recently, the only sector really in the world, and this is not only true in the United States, that has been leveraging up, that is, increasing debt, has been the public sector. As I mentioned in my remarks, the household sector is deleveraging. The corporate sector, to some extent, has been deleveraging and has gotten to a pretty decent financial balance. The financial institutions have been in a process, to some extent, for better or worse, of deleveraging. So the public sector is leveraging up. In my opinion, it's a matter of getting healthy ratios. Let me give you some sense of what those healthy ratios are like. About 3% deficit to GDP is a considered, broadly speaking, a sustainable level. And about 50% debt to GDP is considered, other things being equal, a sustainable level. And actually, the United States is coming from a relatively healthy position where those ratios were pretty much in line over the last couple years and projected into the future, headed toward a less healthy set of ratios. And I think it is simply a matter, not simple, but it is a matter of the responsible authorities, in this case the administration and the Congress, agreeing on a game plan to get those ratios back into a sustainable and serviceable level. Again, as I said, it's like your own household. Your income dictates how much you can afford to borrow and service in loan payments. The same is true for a country. Our income is gross domestic product, broadly speaking, and the size of our economy and the revenues to the government that comes from economic activity will dictate what those ratios can be. So thank you for that very good recitation of the history. Yes, you're correct. It's not headed in the right direction. And, I'm confident that the authorities are going to engage this in the near term. What we really need is simply a credible plan. The world will calm down if we get a credible plan. Other questions? Don't make me call on somebody. Yes, sir. The question is, I can repeat the question, since it was a little shorter than the previous question. The question was, what do I see as the short and long-term future for the unemployment rate in the United States? And I think I touched on this at least thematically in my remarks earlier, in that I think the unemployment rate realistically is going to come down slowly as the economy sustains a recovery. I think the longer-term notion of full employment is higher than we enjoyed prior to the recession. Interestingly, and I often cite this statistic, when I joined the Fed in March of 2007, so that's 3.5 years ago, the unemployment rate was about 4.5%. I think a realistic longer-term full employment target would be in the range of 5.5% to 6%, probably something in that range. And I don't see an easy return to that number in the near term. I think it's going to take some time. Yes, sir.
Sir, you mentioned that manufacturing is growing somewhat, albeit slowly, over the past several quarters. Is that measured by employment or value of goods produced?
I didn't quite catch the end of the question, but it's about manufacturing, and has the growth in manufacturing been generated by?
By employment or value of goods produced. How is that measured?
How is it measured? I see. Well, it's measured by the value of goods produced more than it is by employment. The employment has been, relatively speaking, stable after having lost a fair amount of employment during the recession in the manufacturing sector. Some of that loss of employment in all likelihood is permanent, and some of it is temporary. I've talked to, in recent weeks, to a number of executives of, call them industrial or manufacturing firms, and there is some rehiring going on. For example, I spoke to the chief executive of a building materials firm that is headquartered in Charlotte, quite extensive. And he said he's hired back all the people they laid off. Here in this community, there has been some rehiring of people who were affected during the part of the recession on the part of a major employer here. So there is some rehiring going on, but we're looking basically at, in effect, revenues or sales of the manufacturing sector. And it has been strong. Some of it is replenishing inventory. Some of it is taking advantage of better conditions in particular industries. Some of it is for export. Yes, sir.
I was actually wanting to work for you guys one day, and I'm a student right now at ESU. And I was just wondering, what can I do besides GPA and obvious stuff? What can I do to pad my resume to make sure that you guys can accept me? I'm serious. Anything extra that you can think of that I can do in my spare time to make sure that I'm considered for a job at the Fed?
The gentleman said he'd like to work for us. Not everybody wants to do that after what we've been through the last couple of years. And he asked, you know, how to prepare for that, in effect. You know, I could sort of make light of it and say, well, grow a thick skin, particularly given some of the criticism we got in responding to the financial crisis and such. Well, I think your foundation studies in finance and economics are obviously very important. And I know from just being here for a couple of days what good programs you have at ETSU. And that should put you in good standing, I think, for to be considered. What else? I'll try to give a really serious answer to the question because we can work on our internal culture, so to speak. And as chief executive of the Atlanta Fed, what I'm trying to do is strike a balance between necessary procedure and call it bureaucracy and at the same time encourage creative thinking and energy comes particularly from our younger staff to improve how we operate, improve how we do things. So to the extent that you can kind of show a resume that strikes that balance, that you're capable of improving the processes that you're involved in, and at the same time you're not wild and crazy and shooting from the hip. We're the central bank. We can't do that. So we have to strike that internal balance, and that's what I think your resume should try to depict. Yes, sir.
This kind of picks up on Jerry's question earlier. There is a dichotomy between monetary and fiscal policy. But one of the temptations that can happen is when we have a lot of debt issued by the federal government in fiscal policy, that there's a temptation by the monetary policymaker to monetize that debt. And that can lock in a very, you know, kind of inflation-prone economy. We have three vacancies currently on the Board of Governors, and it will be President Obama who will be appointing the individuals who will fill those positions. How can we resist that temptation to, or are you concerned about the possibility of monetizing debt?
Well, that's a very welcome question, because I feel strongly about this personally, and I want to respond to it. Quick tutorial, although I think it was very well explained. In the circumstances, theoretical circumstances, of no one else in the world prepared to buy government debt, but a continuing deficit and therefore continuing debt financing, if the central bank prints money to buy the debt, that's monetizing the debt. And that picture is largely viewed as a portent of inflation. In response to the specifics of the question, first, I really can only speak for myself, but I think I have a good sense of my colleagues, and that is there is no appetite whatsoever to monetize the debt. Now, conditions can be ambiguous. They can sometimes be unclear, and you never know exactly what decisions will be made until you see what the circumstances are. But as a matter of principle, I think the feeling is strong, at least from my perspective, feeling is very strong that it is inappropriate to monetize the debt. The federal government should get its debt act in order before that kind of situation is presented. We have bought $300 billion of treasuries recently, but in fact our basic balance sheet account of treasuries has been largely stable. And treasury securities, in a way, is the natural asset of a central bank. It's what we should be holding. So your question is really related to the possibility of buying more than a normal amount of treasury securities, as opposed to some not buying them at all. We would be buying them and replacing those that mature, but to keep a balance sheet reasonably steady. So I speaking for myself, there's a strong aversion to the notion that we end up in that situation of monetizing the debt. Now, with that long-winded answer, there was a second part of the question. Can you?
Well, I was just concerned about, who is going to be filling them.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, the our highly, highly esteemed vice chairman of the Federal Reserve, Don Cohn, is retiring. He has extended his work now once or twice in order to just stay in place until he is replaced. The president has nominated my colleague from San Francisco, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, Janet Yellen, to be vice chair. And she has been through her hearings, but her nomination has not yet been confirmed. The president has also nominated two other people, Peter Diamond of MIT and Sarah Raskin, who's a banking supervisor in Maryland. Their nominations are also pending. I can't predict whether the Senate will confirm them, any of them, or not. But when they're in place, then we would have, for the first time in a long time, a full set of governors. We've been working with fewer than the statutory number for quite some time. And we are all very hopeful that that they will be confirmed and be in place and to flesh out the Open Market Committee to the level it's supposed to be at. Yes, sir. Close to the front row here.
I want to ask a question regarding the obvious large levels of federal spending and increase in the regulatory environment that have occurred in the last several years, largely in response to the downturn in the economy. My question is, to what extent do you think that uncertainty relative to the direction and the outcome of all of those changes might be having on business investment, causing businesses not to hire employees and not to make major investments for maybe even a few years until the results of all of those changes have been felt?
I think uncertainty... And my colleague in Dallas gave a speech day before yesterday basically on this theme. Uncertainty is a major factor that is causing businesses and consumers to be cautious and to be careful about extending themselves in one way or another. When I say extend oneself in business terms, that would be making a growth-oriented investment as opposed to a replacement or maintenance investment. In the case of a household, that might be, taking an expensive vacation or making a big consumer durable purchase that could be deferred, car, appliances, furniture. Those are the kinds of things that we need to see happen, but I think that there is a general air of uncertainty about the future that at the moment is restraining the economy. So I think your question is right on to a correct analysis of current circumstances. Way in the back. I'll take maybe two more. How's that? Yes, sir.
Sir, my question is regarding this. I'm lacking to know the differences between a fiat to a currency and, on top of that, a currency that may be backed by commodities such as gold, and whether or not are we backed by gold.
Well, if I understood the question, you use the term fiat money, fiat currency versus currency backed by gold, but the end of the question is, are we going to go back to gold or go back to a commodity-based currency? Is that your question? Or is that a good enough question for me to answer?
I'm asking whether or not we are backed by cancer.
Oh, whether we're backed. The answer is no. We came off the gold standard many decades ago. And the currency of this country and most modern countries, and for that matter, the global system, is essentially one of fiat money. Fiat money means it is issued by governments, and it has no basis other than the trust that one puts in the governments. That's how its value is determined by the capital markets. And so we are in a fiat money system. The gold standard was problematic because it depended upon the supply of a commodity that could change yearly by consumption into jewelry or fillings of teeth or whatever. And it could change by gold discoveries of around the world and mining. And I think I personally am quite comfortable with the notion of fiat money, but it does require that the issuers of that currency conduct themselves very responsibly to preserve value. And that's one of the things the Federal Reserve is dedicated to. Should we make it one more? And that one more that makes me requires me to make a choice between people. Yes, sir.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for your time. I was just, I know it's not your doing or anything, but in all these troubling times, out of all of the states in the United States, it seems that the state of North Dakota has their stuff together. They don't seem to have as much debt or any debt as all. They're actually in a surplus, and they're begging for people to come up there. They have plenty of jobs and everything. And so I know it's not your personal doing, sir, but would you condone the fact that these guys would be an excellent role model for the other states to mimic in such trying times? And do you think that other states can follow such an excellent example? And once again, I'm just a student, so I'm no expert yet. But if I'm not mistaken, I believe they are loaning money to themselves without charging themselves debt through public work projects or things like that. And do you think that other states can mimic such an example?
Well, the question relates to North Dakota, and my staff didn't really prepare me for a question on North Dakota. So in this case, I'm really going to wing it, you know. I have to say my knowledge of North Dakota is slight, but this is what I understand. They have conducted their affairs well. They have relatively few people, which helps. Few people probably means fewer problems to deal with. And they have the benefit of energy income, I believe, in the state, which is also helpful. I don't know exactly how the state of North Dakota extracts state revenues from that energy income, but they have a pretty robust, I believe, gas industry that's has been developed in the last few years. But my impression is, yes, they've conducted their affairs very well. And other states can certainly emulate sort of the sensible balance of revenues and fluctuating revenues to state expenditures. Anybody can do that. What, of course, cannot easily be duplicated is lower population or energy income. There are only a few states that get the complete benefit of that. So that's about as much as I know about North Dakota. Thank you for the question. Thank you all for your attention this morning.